Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, greetings, pod fans, from the Bar des Mousquetaires, which is where I just sourced our pre-recording beers from. And where we are now seated, just outside Court Philippe Chatrier, where the night session, it's 9:03 p.m., so they're probably just about to strike the first ball inside the Philippe Chatrier court this evening, are Elise Cornet and Yelena Ostapenko. Don't worry, we'll be covering that match and the other matches that are yet to finish around the grounds here on day five of Roland Garros. Stefanos Tsitsipas has somehow managed to still find himself on court at gone 9 p.m. So we'll be covering that in part two of the show that we'll be recording a little bit later on. But here we find ourselves in amongst the joyous Parisianness, David, for part one.
Yeah, I like it here, especially with the beers. And actually, we were just reminiscing a little bit about 3 years ago being at Wimbledon on the picnic tables with a drink after broadcasting all day and recording the podcast, and that was such a happy time. And then the pandemic came along and changed everything, and it's just another reminder of how nice it is to be able to do these things again.
Yeah, there was a time in June and July 2020 when my phone was spamming me with 1 year ago today photos and they were all of such happy scenes, and it felt like Apple were throwing egg in my face for a while there. But anyway, we're back with beers in hand, and it's one of those lovely light evenings that you only get at this time of year, and it feels very special, doesn't it? And I'm glad it feels special because, full disclosure, let's front up to this, it hasn't been a special Grand Slam day, has it? It's been a bit of a slow news day. I mean, the contrast in the press room today to yesterday, when it was electric and all eyes were diverted in one place and all attention in one place. It's felt like, you know, journalists scrabbling around for stories and scraping bottoms of barrels just a slightly sort of straggly day.
I think I probably got lucky in a way, in that I got scheduled to do the early shift on BBC Radio, which meant I was in for very start of play. And I kind of feel like the first match that I saw on Simone Mathieu, when Karolina Pliskova was beaten by the 26-year-old French woman, who I'd never heard of when I arrived here, to be quite honest. Jean-Jean.
Yes.
Am I saying that
correctly? Leolia Jean-Jean, yes. And we are going to talk about her in quite some detail, because frankly, she's probably the story of the day. Look, the headline of the day, I think, is the fact that we now have only three of the top 10 women's seeds making it to round number three. Now, I can't tell you exactly how infrequently that has happened in Grand Slams, because that would be giving the game away on Matt's stat.
Oh,
but I am,
what a good teaser,
going to say it's a good stat. It hasn't happened very often, and you should subscribe to the newsletter.
Oh, Catherine, brilliant.
Yes, we spent the afternoon researching that stat.
I helped.
Look at her face.
In between.
I was Matt's research assistant.
An Iga Świątek press conference and the catch-up with Pam Shriver.
Yes.
So it's been a good afternoon.
Pam arrived and said, what are you up to? And I said, doing Matt's research.
Wow.
And I was very proud to help. Yeah, it has happened.
And it's a good stat.
Very infrequently. And
And yet I don't feel like this has been a tournament sort of full of upsets.
No.
I think you can go through them and you can look at Jabeur, absolutely was an upset, but we spoke about it at the time. It happened on sort of day minus one in a way.
Yeah, Jabeur and Sakkari, they're upsets.
But Sakkari lost to Mukova.
Which is an entirely plausible result. Totally losable. Kontaveit
hasn't been
not
informed.
An upset.
Muguruza not informed. Krejcikova hasn't played.
The form element is big, isn't it? Aside from Iga Świątek and Ash Barty, nobody's been in great form this year, apart from maybe Ons Jabeur. You could say that as well. I think the other thing is that normally you would say Naomi Osaka losing in a first round is a shock, but she lost to Amanda Anisimova and she hasn't played that well herself in the last 18 months even. The same with Andreescu. You know, you'd look at these as shocks if you looked at them in their heyday or their peak from before. Now, look, I think Naomi Osaka and Bianca Andreescu are going to have peaks again, but at the moment, it's a bit of a trough for a lot of players.
Mm. Yeah, so today we lost the 9th seed, Danielle Collins. She lost to Shelby Rogers. And we lost the 8th seed, Karolina Pliskova, as you said, David, to the world number 227, the French wildcard, Léolia Jean-Jean. This was just her second ever match against a top 100 player.
Really?
And the first of those was round one.
This is her first ever Grand Slam. I mean, she's never been anywhere near this level in her life. Now, Pliskova didn't look right, did she, David?
No.
She was broken in half of her 8 service games, 28 errors.
She was hitting the bottom of the net with rally balls. It was a horrible watch from her point of view, but her opponent also did, I felt, caused some of that by playing very well.
She's the lowest-ranked female player to win a match at Roland Garros against a top 10 opponent since... It was in the 80s, David. You might be able to get this.
And this is not Matt Stack?
No.
Well,
wow. Because this was doing the rounds on the internet. So
okay.
Matt likes to...
The 80s.
Matt likes to be first.
Top 10 player losing to a low-ranked player in the 80s.
At Roland Garros. It's a bit... you'll kick yourself, but I'm going to tell you. Conchita Martinez lost to Laurie McNeil.
In the 80s.
1988, yeah.
Goodness, I would never have got that.
Jean-Jean was being described very widely as an ex-prodigy, which I think is one of the most brutal labels it is possible to have.
Well, surely she was a prodigy just a long, long time ago.
Well, yeah, thus ex-prodigy. Apparently, age 12, she was nicknamed the Mozart of tennis, a female Richard Gasquet. Her coach at the time, Nicholas Piotrowski, said of her around the age of 12, "I only had it for a year, but it was like being in a washing machine. That year was amazing. The pressure, the stress, the expectations. You're already signing contracts with Nike and with Babolat. As soon as you went to a place, it was a fairground phenomenon. There was really incredible expectation around her." That's a 12-year-old. She then dislocated her patella 3 times in her adolescence.
Goodness.
And decided to go and study in the US. Continued playing tennis, I think, got a tennis scholarship. But she obtained a bachelor's degree in sociology, a bachelor's degree in criminal justice, and a master's degree in wealth investment finance.
Wow.
Before deciding to give tennis another crack.
That's brilliant.
And she said in her press conference that, she's come back here. She's 26 years old now. And she thought, well, I was really good at tennis when I was 14 or 15. Why wouldn't I still be good now? Tennis was always my thing. I'm going to give it another go. And it's a pretty amazing story, actually. And David, I'm interested because I didn't get to watch that match. Catherine and I were watching Paula Badosa. What's she like as a player?
I didn't watch the rallies that kind of closely, but the bits that I got to see, she felt very instinctive. I know it's a stereotype, but a lot of French players are instinctive players. Hugo Gaston and players like this, they have the foundations of the game and then they go with the flow, whatever that is. What really struck me is in the final game, I had a horrible feeling for her because here she is, 6-2, 5-1 up, and you could start to think that this could all go horribly wrong for her because you could see her tighten. There were nerves. She did stiffen. She did lose a couple of points that she'd been winning earlier. And then she just got on with it and won the match. Now, Pliskova was kind of helping her out because she was struggling so much. And I feel for her because she didn't look well and she's had a terrible time. She broke her arm, didn't she, in that incident earlier on in the year or end of last year. But you still have to get over the line when you've never done this before. What I did see as well, though, is that she got a fantastic college record of loads and loads and loads of match wins. And whilst it can not compare in any way in terms of sort of conditions to this, at least she's got an experience of winning a heck of a lot of matches. And,
yeah, well, they say winning becomes a habit.
Yeah.
Don't they?
And I just... It was a really inspiring watch, to be honest, and I think the crowd really bought into it. I think that they kind of... Probably a bit like me, they start seeing this player and probably start Googling her and finding out, well, what's her story then? Why have I never heard of her before? And it was lovely, really, to see somebody come out of nowhere, 26 years of age, has obviously had a lot go on in her life, and yet detours, which are really uplifting detours, but then come back to tennis.
I wonder if Karolina Pliskova knew who she was. There was a video going around after her first round performance, which she won, against a French Madagascan
player.
The first name's Tessa, and the Encore interview mentioned that Tessa is a fan of yours, Pliskova. What was it like playing against her? And she said, who? She said, I didn't know her name. Slightly savage from Pliskova.
Speaking of difficulty getting over the line, Jessica Pegula, this is a Pam Shriver stat, folks. She has needed 18 match points in two rounds.
Wow.
10 in the first round and then 8 today.
Yeah.
And she was 6-1, 5-1 up today and ended up having to win it 6-4 in the third.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think of her in takes that don't age well. I said to Matt when she was about 6-1, 5-1, I think of Jessica Pegula as quite a I think of her as a closer.
Me too.
Pretty no nonsense. Those 18 match points surprised me.
I went to her press conference and asked her about it, and she said it was in my head. You know, I was thinking back to the first round when it kept happening. It's kind of impossible not to.
Was she thinking about the Sakkari match?
Well, quite possibly, yeah. And you know, she did mention that, you know, the other player started playing brilliantly. She said, "I didn't actually think I did that much wrong."
And the other player was Angelina Kalinina, who I saw up close playing Emma Raducanu in Madrid, and she can play.
She really can, yeah. She's had a lot of wins over the last 12 months. So it was a difficult match for Jessica Pegula. I was kind of surprised she was 6-1, 5-1 up in it, to be honest. But then at the end, she was just like, I just wanted it to be over. It was stressful.
She was sitting courtside and gesturing to her coaching team about the sheer number of match points, wasn't she? She was counting them on her fingers, yeah, and showing them how many,
yeah,
she'd had.
Yeah, she was.
I like that, though. I think that's probably a good way to deal with it, is to laugh at your own expense a little bit.
She's so self-aware, isn't she? And aware, generally. It's so funny, isn't it? She's, you know, she's very famously the daughter of a billionaire, very famously wealthy family in the States. And you can imagine, you know, often that sort of person, not always, but often they're not particularly in touch with the world or, yeah, have great perspective. And she really does. And she works damn hard, doesn't she? Because she's got a really, really good game, but there's nothing particularly special in her game. I think she's absolutely maxing out on her potential, and I've got a lot of time for that.
Mm. Yes, and I think even the fact that she's put herself on the player council of the WTA Tour is a indication that, you know, she's sort of worldly and wants to know how things work and make an impact and help other people. It's really admirable, I think.
She has last year's semi-finalist Tamara Zidanšek in round number 3.
She was a semi-finalist last year. I'd forgotten that.
Yeah.
Blimey.
Yeah. True story, David. While you were watching Karolina Pliskova's defeat, Matt and I were watching Paola Badosa fight through against Kaya Juvan on Suzanne Longlen. It was a brilliant match. Loved this. Kaya Juvan, she can play. She is a fun time, folks.
Why is that?
Well, can I say inside out forehand drop shot return?
You can. This was on my court long run,
right? Yes. There was other stuff as well, but That will live with me forever.
So I'm trying to picture this. So is it a body serve from Badossa?
No, it's you know, it was a wide serve, and you know the classic wide serve on clay, player jumps around their backhand, hit the in to out forehand.
So it's a kick serve
return,
out wide.
Kick serve out wide. She does that. She does the dancing around it, but then hits a drop shot, a bending inverse banana in to out drop shot return.
Side spin on it.
I've never seen it before.
Clean
never.
Winner.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
It was absolutely brilliant.
I'd love to be in her mind on the tennis court because all sorts of things are going on in
Do
there.
Do you think that was premeditated or was that instinctive?
Do you mean when she set up to return, she runs around,
does she look like she's going to absolutely batter it?
Yeah, I think at the point that she's running around, she knows what she's going to do. But she hasn't decided before the serve comes down.
Okay. Wow.
Look, I thought Badossa played well today. I thought there were signs of the lack of, you know, baked-in confidence. Mm-hmm. There were signs where it could look a bit fragile, but when she was playing well, she really was playing well. You know, she was hitting the ball with conviction and authority, which is what I remember just being so struck by from her at the very start of this year.
There's an acceptance about her, isn't there, that okay, maybe she's had a rough few months, but the baked in thing has got to be sort of cultivated over a period of time. It can't just click the fingers.
She said she was really pleased with her fight today, and she did have to fight. Lost the second set to Yuvan, and it really felt like that third set could go either way. She said she admitted. I asked her in press today how big a win like that would be for her confidence. You know, we've seen so many seeds fall. It would have been so easy for her to fall today, and for it to have been a bit like Maria Sakkari's loss. You know, a kind of, well, I suppose that's an upset, but it's not a huge shock. She didn't have confidence, you know, it didn't have form coming in, all of that kind of thing. But she really dug in, and she kind of admitted that's been lacking a bit in some of her recent matches. She hasn't been able to find that.
She got a coaching warning, didn't she?
Right
at the start of the third set, and was really angry about it, both on court and I think also in the press conference afterwards. She said she was going to track down the WTA supervisor.
Yes, I asked her about it, sort of thinking, oh, she could get arsy that I've asked, but it went the other way. It was almost like, well, I'm glad you've asked. You have shone a light on a major issue. She said she was going to go speak to the supervisor.
But I think actually her response after that was really impressive, because she was a breakdown, I think, at that point in the third set. Yuvan broke right at the start. And that seemed to, I don't know, I don't want to say focus her, because I don't think she ever lost focus, but she seemed even more determined and channeled whatever frustration she was feeling towards the umpire into, you know, her forehand and whatever. And she played extremely well in the last six games after getting the warning.
So Badossa is through, the second highest seed remaining. Obviously Iga Świątek is also through.
Who's Badossa got?
Badossa now plays Veronika Kudermatova, and they've got an interesting head-to-head, because Kudermatova used to dominate it. It was 3-love, I think, most of those matches last year, maybe even all of them last year. But this season, Badossa, okay, maybe she hasn't quite had some of the results we've expected her to, but she's turned around that head-to-head with Kudermatova. They've played a couple of times, and she's won both times very, very easily.
So Iga Świątek, love and two for her today. Just the one bagel, which you think is well below par.
Well,
David,
it was 2-love, and I said that I think this is going to be a double bagel. And the thing is, I was commentating on this match, and I thought Alison Risk played quite well. She lost. She lost 6-love, 6-2. She fought her heart out. There was not one point.
Which is what she does, isn't it?
She didn't give up a single point on court Susan Longner. She was laughing at the standard of tennis that Iga Świątek was playing. It was so good. She was handcuffing Risk with Djokovician returns right down the middle, right on the baseline. And then what can you do? You get the ball back and she hits it either way she wants for a winner. It doesn't matter whether it's forehand or backhand. The level of tennis, she got to 6-love, 4-love before she lost the game. And she can't, I don't know whether she lost her concentration a bit, because in that game she hit more unforced errors in that, what would it have been, the 11th game, than she'd hit in the entire match. And It was like a Steffi Graf 1989 performance, and this is just a theme. This is what she does week in, week out, day in, day out. The ravenous desire to win every single point, and the skill set she has, and the power, and the physicality. She's a quite awesome tennis player.
Tomorrow, Friday, and again, this is a Pam Shriver stat. It'll be 100 days since she's lost a tennis match.
Oh, that is a good stat. Who was that to? Ostapenko.
Yelena Ostapenko.
7-6 in the third.
I asked Ostapenko in her press conference, would it have been yesterday, a couple of days ago, you know, you were the last player to beat Iga Świątek. I think the whole WTA Tour wants to know how you did it. And she said, I know how to play against her.
Yelena.
And then stopped her answer there. She wasn't going any further. And they are in the same section of the draw.
In commentary, we ran through the entire draw trying to work out. Obviously, there's a big if. Świątek has to maintain this form and not get injured. But if she does maintain this form, who, if anybody, could hurt her? Who could have a day and hurt her? To me, it's Ostapenko. Maybe a Camilla Giorgi, just by going flat out with power. Although I don't think she's as good as Ostapenko. I actually don't think Georgie's good enough, to be honest.
Scrap that.
I think Giorgi would just end up feeding Świątek the power balls that she wants to hit them away for winners. Naomi Brody was sensing, and I think, or Naomi Kavadai, I can't remember who it was in our commentary box, was saying that actually maybe it's a player with consistency who is going to be the one that might cause the problems. But obviously, I mean, we'll come on to Simona Halep, but she's out, so there's one player that it won't be. But there aren't many that you can make a compelling case for, really. If Świątek plays like this, how do you beat the woman?
I don't think it's about the opponent. I think it's about Świątek.
Yeah, me too.
I agree, we
said that pre-talk. I mean, look, there would be certain opponents that would put her in more of a position to doubt herself, perhaps, if she were ever going to. Of course, but I think if we're going through the draw on tennis, there's nobody that can get close. It certainly seems at the moment. She plays Danka Kovanec next. We were debating, so it'll obviously be these halves of the draw that we're seeing today that will play on Saturday. And Saturday is the day of the Champions League final, which I know not everybody listening to this podcast will care about, but most people that are interested in tennis will also have at least a passing interest in the Champions League final, and everybody in this city has an interest.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it?
In the Champions League final. And I was thinking, who are they going to put in the night session up against the Champions League final? And I thought, they'll probably put a women's match there, because, you know, that seems to be what they do here in terms of treatment of women. But I honestly don't think you can put Iga Świątek in the night session, because
it could have been 47 minutes.
And it could be less than an hour. There is a high risk of it
being. She won the first set today in 20 minutes. She was
four, I just don't think you can do that when people have paid what they've paid for one tennis match. It's going to be very interesting to see if she ever plays a night session match, because she's the world number one. She's a sight to behold. I love watching her, but I would also be annoyed if I was a punter that had paid money and only saw 45 minutes of tennis,
no matter
what it was.
If you're only getting the one match, that's the problem with it, isn't it?
So Świątek through, shock news. Badosa through, Pegula through. Arina Kabilia-Begu run through earlier on today. Now, why are we talking about this? She beat Ekaterina Alexandrova. She's quite a big win, actually. Alexandrova, a semi-finalist in Madrid. Begu will be the third-round opponent of Leolia Jean-Jean. But she probably should have been defaulted, Begu, that match.
I think so. I mean, I suppose you try to look at precedents that are out there already. What happened was she bounced her racket when she was near her chair, and the racket somersaulted into the crowd, and it nearly hit somebody. And I think a kid cried, all the rest of it. I think the only reason that she wasn't defaulted probably was because it actually didn't hit anybody. And, you know, I know somebody else has thrown a racket into the nearly hit a cameraman, but actually didn't and got away with it. Novak Djokovic, of course, did hit a line judge with the ball, and that's what ended up. I think if he'd have missed the line judge, even though it was reckless, he'd have got away with it. But it's the problem is that players are just instinctively doing this stuff, and I'm sure the fact that there are a few repercussions to it is part of the reason that their instinct goes to doing it.
Do we need to adjust the rules so it's not about outcome, which ultimately is a matter of luck, isn't it? The point is that you're doing something reckless with your racket where you don't know where it could go. You're relying on luck for it not to to injure somebody.
Yes, I think so. I had a look back at the US Open statement from when Novak Djokovic did get defaulted a couple of years ago, and the words they used were reckless, intentional, and a negligent disregard for the consequences. And I think, you know, Begu's racket bounce was all of those things, to be honest. I think there was...
She didn't even really look where it went, did she? She was busy getting her next racket out of her bag. It was extreme. Obviously, she didn't mean or want it to hit somebody. Nobody's suggesting that, but negligent, reckless, all of those things.
She looked quite upset at the end, and I suspect she realised what she'd done.
There was a child in floods of tears, wasn't there? I mean, you'd have to be pretty hard of heart not to be.
I don't know exactly what the line should be in terms of the rule, because I don't necessarily feel like the moment the racket leaves your hand, you should be defaulted. But I do think that if your racket bounces and goes into the crowd like that, you're risking somebody's health, and that can't happen.
Amazingly, over on court 14, Aryna Sabalenka managed not to break any rackets.
Well done,
facing
Aryna.
Facing Madison Brengel, who is the ultimate racket smash inducer, I think. I just can't imagine the frustration of playing Madison Brengel. Yes. Everyone's thinking, why am I not winning this? Why am I not winning this easier? Why is she winning points? I mean, she's amazing.
She's the closest thing to the club player who winds you up because you think, I'm better than this player.
Yeah, and it's she's such a provocateur for big hitters. And I relate to it so hard. You know, the dolly second serve that your heart leaps at and goes, I'm going to hit this as hard as I can. It's right in my hitting zone. You can see it searing for a winner before you've even made contact with the ball. And obviously it hits the back fence. And it was very much that it was a high level club match over on court 14. I really don't think she's going to win this tournament, but I'm really impressed that Sabalenka is getting these wins. Quite frankly, she would have been another person that, had she lost in round one or round two, we'd have all gone, oh, Sabalenka lost, bit of a surprise, shrugged and moved on.
Yes, if you told me that only three of the top 10 seeds made it through to round three, I would have thought, well, Sabalenka would have been one of the ones who didn't make it through. Such was her form, her confidence, the general state of her game at the moment. But, you know, kind of like we said in Australia, any time she's able to win without that, you know, sort of game, I think, is kind of impressive from her.
Mary Carrillo was out there watching on court 14. She came in to watch it on her day off. That is how much that woman loves tennis.
Go on, Mary.
She informs us that the first point of the match was a double fault from Aryna Sabalenka.
The perseverance of Aryna Sabalenka,
again,
we called it.
Yeah.
In Australia.
Over in the men's draw, I don't think any real upsets today as we record at the moment. I know Stefanos Tsitsipas is embroiled in something. We will be talking about that later, folks. He's 5-5 in the fourth set as we come to you, and he's having not a fun time, I would say, against Zdeněk Kolář, who I think, as we all declared on last night's podcast, we'd never heard of before yesterday. So look, if Kolář research is required before part two, we will do the required research and we'll bring you up to date with that. But as we stand at the moment, no massive upsets unless you count Gilles Simon getting his retirement ceremony cancelled again. He's only gone and beaten Steve Johnson.
Yeah, and he was 3-love down with Gilles. I'm not surprised after he was here at about 12:01 a.m. the other night when he was trying to keep his French Open life.
Do you think there'll come a point where they just go, well, you're not getting your retirement ceremony then, Gilles. If you keep bloody winning...
You can get it if you win the title.
You had your chance.
He's into the third round. It's bloody impressive.
And he plays Marin Cilic in the third round.
Combined age of about 80.
And he always beats Marin Cilic.
Does he?
He's always beat Marin Cilic.
He's got, I think he won 6 of their 7 matches.
Yeah, quirky head-to-head fun.
Wow.
Is it on? No,
Gilles
it's not
Simon
on, is it?
In round in the second week of the French Open. Absolute lol.
Matt
at
goes
that.
Big on Gilles Simon.
Daniil Medvedev came through in three sets against Laszlo Djere. A real clay court match, this. I'm impressed with the way Medvedev is just so accepting of the challenges of clay. He said he didn't feel like he played as well as he did in his opening match. He said he felt like he hit a heavier ball in the opening match, and maybe he'll need to do that in the next round. He plays Miomir Kecmanovic, who beat Alexander Bublik earlier on today. We didn't see any of that match, but pod fan, friend of the pod, Stephen, that we all met earlier on today and had flown over from California to watch Andrei Bublik against Miomir Kecmanovic.
He didn't fly over to me.
He informs us that Bublik tanked away that third set with countless underarm serves.
It couldn't
and
be a more Bublik scoreline.
I'm sad that I missed it. But Medvedev said, he said, look, overall he's happy. He's very, I don't think any of us have him in our quarterfinals.
He could go all the way, couldn't he? He could go all the way.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Tsitsipas. Who would have thought Tsitsipas would be 5-all in the fourth set against a player I honestly had not heard of before this week?
Yeah, and I remember kind of the same thing happening with Medvedev last year at Roland Garros, in that we had absolutely no expectations of him coming in because he spent the entire clay court season saying how rubbish he is on clay and how much he hates the clay and writing it on all the camera lenses. And suddenly he sort of quite easily made his way through to the quarterfinals, and in the end he got beaten by Stefanos Tsitsipas, and that matchup on clay certainly favoured Tsitsipas, and that could happen again. But Tsitsipas is struggling, and Medvedev just keeps going through. And this year, we had lower expectations because of his hernia operation. We hadn't actually, and the fact he lost to Richard Gasquet in 2022. We hadn't actually seen that much of him on clay. But I think the conditions here are maybe some of his favourite clay court conditions, perhaps.
We both went to his press conference because it's always a fun time.
Yeah.
And I asked him about Netflix, because obviously the last time we checked in with him about Netflix was at the Australian Open, right after the big reveal that Serve to Survive is happening. That's my name for it. That's a working title.
It's good, though. It's good.
And he said, no, I'm not going to be involved. And he actually gave quite a revealing answer about it today, didn't he? He certainly seemed to have... It's not a principled objection to being in. He sort of said, look, I think it's going to be great. I think it's a brilliant thing. I expect to be involved in it, at some point in the future. But he said he didn't feel in the right headspace to get involved in it at the time. He said he didn't have the energy at the end of last season. He said he felt like he still didn't have the energy now. And that's both kind of revealing about him and how relentless his schedule has been for pretty much his entire career since he developed a hernia, and also about the Netflix project, because I guess naively I should know better for somebody working in TV, but just thought, you're doing what you would do anyway, but there happened to be cameras there filming you do it. But he talked about the Netflix undertaking as quite a big deal, quite a big dedication of time and energy, and I don't know.
This was in the press conference here.
Yeah.
It
was interesting.
I wonder whether now, given the state of the world, whether he feels compromised in that regard as well.
Possibly, but he's usually pretty frank. I don't know. I feel like he might have said that if that were the case. That might be a factor too, but I certainly believed him today in terms of what he was saying. So Medvedev is through, plays Kecmanovic next. That could be good. I think Kecmanovic is the test. Tsitsipas we will deal with later. Awaiting Tsitsipas or Zdeněk Kolář, we'll obviously deal with that later. But awaiting the winner of that match in round three is Mikhail Imer, who beat Dan Evans earlier on today. Evans got booed off the court. David, you watched all of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the booing was a bit harsh, really. I understand why it happened, because on match point, Evans had enough, and he didn't do a proper return. It was the closest thing to a tank that I've ever seen from Dan Evans, but it was the final point. He'd got nothing left. He hasn't been very well this last week.
He looked awful.
He's had a chest infection, to be honest, and he played brilliantly the other day, and he had to win in straight sets. He knew he had to, and today he got off to a start. He was 5-1 down, and he just couldn't get going. I don't know why. I haven't spoken to him, but then he managed to make a fight of the first set, and it was almost like one of those fight backs within a set that you end up losing, but you invest for the rest of the match, and it paid off because he won the second set. He went 2-love up in the third, so he's a set all 2-love up. Honestly, I thought Dan Evans wins from here. He lost 6 games in a row. And look, Imer is a really talented guy. The hands he has, the way he's able to manipulate lobs over the head of his opponent. Evans was playing so many drop shots, which again I think is a telltale sign. He just wanted to get the rallies over with because he couldn't do what he normally does. And Imer can handle all that. So I think the main problem was Dan Evans was just physically not right today. Imer's a good player, but one I would have thought he would have beaten if they were both fully fit.
And just on that, you've reminded me that I forgot to cover Simona Halep, who lost today to Zheng Qin Wen of China, 19-year-old from China. Obviously, fantastic win for her, and she is one to watch. She is a good player. Matt earmarked this yesterday as a potential upset, and that was before.
Oh, really?
Before we saw Halep being what seemed to be pretty unwell on the court. She had her blood pressure taken. She was having breathing difficulty. Apparently, she's just been into press while we've been recording, and I've seen a tweet from Ben Rothenberg reporting that she had a panic attack. She says she had a panic attack during the third set of that match, would it have been? Which is awful, and I wish Simona Halep well, but she's good, Zheng.
Yeah, she is, and I was reading up on her. She moved to Barcelona a couple of years ago to base herself there and train on clay, and it seems to have done wonders for her career, because, you know, in the last couple of years, she's only very young. It's the sort of time in her career where she would be expecting to make progress, but she really has. She's climbed a lot in the rankings in the last couple of years. There was a story about during COVID times where she didn't want to go on planes, so she drove around Europe in her car to tournaments and matches rather than flying. And yeah, she's good. She's got a really nice game, kind of fluid ground strokes, really nice movement, hits the ball pretty hard as well. She's used to work with Carlos Rodriguez when she was much younger, so she's definitely one to watch. But yeah, Halep. Feel for her, you know, she really cannot catch a break, and it's a real shame.
Zheng plays the winner of the match currently on court that we'll cover in part two between Elise Cornet and Elaine Ostapenko, which absolutely lol at this scoreline. Cornet, first set, 6-love. Ostapenko, currently 3-love and serving in set number
I love
two.
It. Watching that back.
And also, as we come to you, Kolar with a mini break in the fourth set. High break. Seems to be out-of-date tennis news for you. Just quickly to wrap up in part one, Casper Ruud marches on. He beat Emil Ruusuvuori in the all-Nordic battle. He plays Lorenzo Sonego next. And Holger Rune marches on as well, and he'll play Hugo Gaston.
Oh, I want to watch that. Please put it on long then again, and then I can go.
I think Gaston might be at the stage now where he's requesting Longlen. What do you think? He wasn't Longlen today.
On,
yes, it's a sort of Nick Kyrgios, John Cain Arena situation.
I think
that
might be where he is. Cult following, all of that. David Goffin, the resurgent David Goffin, he beat Francis Tiafoe today. He now plays Hubert Hurkacz, who, look, frankly, I've not seen a ball of this tournament, but I've been tipped off by a couple of people. Somebody that's directing some of the outside courts actually and has watched a lot of Hubert Hurkacz said he's playing really, really well, and we never talk about him, we never mention him, he's not in my predictions. I don't know if he's in yours, but He's a pretty good tennis player, and he's playing well. Andre Rublev, I think, has won through against Federico Del Bonis, and he'll now play Christian Garin.
Yeah, who has won today, I think, in four sets.
He did, David.
And he beat Tommy Paul, I think, the other
day. He's beaten
Tommy
Paul and Ilya Ivashka, who was my prediction today, because Matt's constantly telling me Ilya Ivashka is really quite good.
Oh, well done, Matt. That worked.
We're being hustled, David. That's what I'm coming to realise.
I also picked Tommy Paul to beat Christian Garin.
He's hustled himself.
Basically, nobody's backing Christian Garin at the moment. But that'll be tough for Rublev. He has not hit his stride yet. He's dropped sets in both matches he's played so far. He was, seeing red in round one. That could be tough for him.
I still can't watch him, so I wouldn't know.
No, we'll keep you posted, David. Look, we're going to sign off for part one. We'll be back soon with part two. Well, very soon for you, less soon for us.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Well, welcome back to part two of your day five French Open tennis podcast. And it's safe to say that Elise Cornet and Yelena Ostapenko did not disappoint. In fact, look, I've not been inside the stadium and I've not been commentating the way you have on some of these night session matches, David. But to me, to my eye, that looked like the best night session of the lot so far. I know there would probably have been worrying moments after that 6-love first set to Elise Cornet, where everyone's thinking, oh my God, is this going to be over in 45 minutes and people asking for refunds? But that didn't happen. It was a cracking match, a cracking atmosphere and some cracking face from Yelena Ostapenko. And I'm not really sure what more a person can ask for.
Yes, Yelena Ostapenko did Yelena Ostapenko and Elise Cornet did Elise Cornet. And that's kind of what you imagine that the schedulers had in mind, really. And they also had a winner for the French crowd, which they would have loved. And yeah, I mean, those are seriously lopsided sets, aren't they? 6-love, 1-6, and then but in the end we watched that final set together and it was pretty dramatic, really, because Ostapenko is so prepared to take on everybody and not worry about the consequences, not worry about what people in the crowd might be saying or anybody back home. She's just herself. She says what she thinks. She does what she thinks is right.
She wears what she wants.
She wears what she wants. She goes after her shots. Her facial expressions are hilarious. And I personally, I mean, I'm simultaneously enormously amused at the look-away handshake, one of the most dramatic of the genre that I've ever seen, and also slightly, I'm not a huge fan of it on another handle. I know that makes me a hypocrite, well, but
David and I have just had an off-air mini row about this because I agree that it's, you know, a bit it's pathetic from Yelena Ostapenko, the no-look handshake. I just think, you know, in the pantheon of, you know, pathetic heat of the moment acts, I think it's pretty harmless.
It's panto.
Really. But I don't find it as disrespectful as you do. She still shook her hand.
It bothered me at the time, I must say, because I saw saw the screenshots of it. What makes it kind of okay to me is the way that Elise Cornet just grinned like a Cheshire cat at her while she did it and then sort of walked off as though she'd just won the lottery, you know, and doesn't care
at all.
And
I think what makes it more okay is Elise Cornet's definitely done some no-look handshakes in her time. It kind of feels like fair game between those two, whatever goes down.
You can almost imagine them having a giggle about it in the locker room in a week's time.
Yes, I enjoyed it so much. I've made it our new group photo on WhatsApp.
Go on, Matt.
There was so... I mean, this isn't good radio, is it? But there was so much enjoyable Ostapenko face. Head to our Twitter. I'm going to put some of it on our Instagram as well because I can't resist, quite frankly. It was excellent. But she's out of the tournament. Elise Cornet marches on.
Is there anyone left in the tournament who knows how to beat Iga Świątek? That is the question.
Is there anybody else who's capable of beating her if she's on?
Will Yelena Ostapenko pass on
Will
her
she
winning
now
formula
reveal her wisdom? Yeah.
To someone else?
I think
for a price.
And I know, you know, some of the way she reacted to that question is tongue in cheek, but I seriously can worry for the lack of firepower for players to be able to hurt Świątek if she's on. Look, I still caveat that with she needs to be 100% fit. She needs to not have a letdown. But if she plays her best, I just don't know what you can do.
There is actually nobody left in the draw who has beaten Świątek this season. Obviously, Ash Barty beat her in Adelaide. She's retired. And Danielle Collins and Ostapenko were the only other two players to beat her. And they both lost today.
Goodness me. Well, Elise Cornet will go on to face Jung Chin Wen, who we were talking about earlier, of course. And just very quickly, while we're revisiting that match of Jung's victory over a very depleted Simona Halep, we were just watching the Eurosport coverage of that Cornet match, and popping up after it was an interview with Simona Halep that they'd recorded earlier on this evening, where Simona Halep just spoke so frankly and with such relaxation about the panic attack that she suffered on court and how alarming it was for her. She'd never really experienced that before, but she obviously, it's pretty unusual for a TV station to request a player if they lose. I don't know this, but it's certainly possible that Simona Halep asked to do that TV appearance and explain the situation and proactively be open about it, which I think is amazing.
Yeah, I would imagine she will have helped a lot of people who've suffered panic attacks by the way she came out matter-of-factly after the event, explained how depleting, how much it hurt her at the time, but how she's fine now, because that is the experience for a lot of people with panic attacks. You can feel like they're the worst thing in the world at the time. I've had them in the past, but they pass most of the time, and you feel okay afterwards. And I think it's important that there's a normalization of that, and
especially now, because she said, look, I think it's an accumulation of things. She said, I had a lot of injuries, then a pandemic happened. I think this is accumulated, pent up anxiety that maybe I haven't processed. I'm paraphrasing a bit there, putting words in her mouth a little, but that's the sense I got from what she said, and that is hella relatable right now, isn't it, for a lot of people, us included. I think one other big result to wrap up, and that is a victory finally for Stefanos Tsitsipas over on Longland. My goodness me, did he go the long way around. He did get it done in four sets. It looked for a while, well, for several points, that it was going to go to a fifth set, because Zdeněk Kolář was 6-3 up in the fourth set tiebreak.
Yeah. I mean, that's a heck of a big lead, isn't it? And the crowd are chanting his name. They're so into
an honorary Frenchman. Yeah. Look, obviously fantastic for Tsitsipas to have won through that, but he spent nearly 8 hours on court for the opening two rounds. It's got a very Matthias Borg, Radek Stepanek, Andy Murray opening two rounds.
Oh, what a great reference.
I've stolen that a little bit from Matt, David.
Very good, I like it.
But, yeah, we all know what ended up happening there and what Boris Becker's take on it was, which was those excess sets that Murray played in the opening two rounds were what cost him in the final against Novak Djokovic. Is this a problem for Tsitsipas?
I think the biggest problem is he's not playing well, and therefore he's spending this extra time on court. And he really isn't playing well. I mean, he cleaned up his game against Musetti, didn't he? But he was really helped by Musetti, as we said, kind of disappearing in sets 3-5 the other night. And today, you know, he said that Kolar drove him crazy and he found it difficult to play someone with little expectation who was going for their shots. Tsitsipas was constantly on the back foot in that match, and normally Tsitsipas on clay is on the front foot and dictating and expressing himself. So I think the form is an issue. I still will back him in that bottom half of the draw because I think he's a much better clay courter than someone like Medvedev, for example. I think he's better at slams than Rublev and Ruud, for example.
That's well put.
So I still back him. He's a great fighter. You know, he's winning these matches. He's fought through that one today. He needs to improve his tennis, though, because he's so far off the level that we know he's capable of.
And he's doing footwork on his serve again, which, yeah, not all the time, but, yeah, he's doing that falling off the serve thing. And, yeah, as Mary says, I'm sure she puts it more pithily than I'm about to, but if your serve needs footwork, something's not quite right. Mats Wilander said on the Eurosport coverage that we just watched that Tsitsipas's backhand is not progressing in the way it should be.
Yeah, he praised his attitude, didn't he? His fighting spirit. But really, I agree with Matt. I think if you're in his position, you need to be navigating these opening rounds with the minimum of fuss. This opponent today, Kolar, all credit to him, but that should not be happening to Stefanos Tsitsipas because he's such a natural clay courter. He's in his natural habitat and he doesn't feel entirely convincing at the moment.
Yeah. Makes it interesting, doesn't it, in that bottom half of the draw, which looked like it could very possibly be a procession for Tsitsipas at the start of the tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a guy I didn't mention in there who is Jannik Sinner. He won today. I've realised this today. He's only ever lost to Rafael Nadal at Roland Garros, which is one of those sort of slightly weird stats. It's just because he's been in Nadal's section, I suppose, and beaten who he should beat and run into him, but you know, he dropped the opening set today, I think, and came back to win. He'd be another name that I'd be... Tsitsipas has got a good record against him this season, hasn't he, Sinner? That hasn't been a good matchup for Sinner. But he's probably another one who you would give more of a chance if Tsitsipas is not playing well.
Yeah. Mackenzie McDonald next for Sinner and Mikhail Immer next for Tsitsipas. What is next for us at the French Open? Friday schedule starts on Philippe Chatrier at midday local time with Bencic against Fernandez. There is unquestionably lopsidedness in these draws. There is one day with blockbuster matches everywhere you look and then alternate days with, you know, slightly slimmer pickings, and that's what we've had today. But tomorrow, my goodness, Bencic against Fernandez, Djokovic against Bednay, which
belongs on this.
Yeah, it does. Poor Aliash Bednay. Sloane Stephens against Diane Parry. Could be interesting. Chatrier crowd into it. They've already got to know Diane Parry, haven't they? So they know what they're dealing with. And then under the lights on Friday, Sebastian Corda against Carlos Alcaraz.
Yes, please.
Long Len in Yes, Please news starts with Amanda Anisimova against Karolina Muchova.
Oh, yes.
Really, really looking forward to that. Then Kaya Kanepi against Coco Gauff. Love that. Rafael Nadal against Bertic van der Zandschulp, which people are bigging up this match.
People including David, I think.
People including David.
Well, I just think Longlen, I think van der Zandschulp is a lot better than maybe his hype or lack of hype gives him. When you see him, he's quite convincing. He's quite difficult to play against. And he's got nothing to lose. So it's just, if Nadal plays like Nadal, it's a non-entity. But he might not.
Could be the first test of the foot if van der Zandschulp gets a set, makes it a bit physical. Definitely worth having more than one eye on. Maybe even two eyes. That's probably the maximum anyone's got available. finally, on Longlen, Alexander Zverev against Brandon Nakashima, who Pam Shriver was telling me earlier that Nakashima is getting some attention in America. He's engaging people. Apparently, he's an incredible competitor, having been through the college system over there. Might not have the weapons of some younger players, but...
Well, Zverev better sort himself out because he at the moment, he's not at the level of a player who's even going to be in the quarterfinals. So if Nakashima plays well and Zverev doesn't, it could
not
be very
playing like a member of the new big three just now. No. Caught Simon Mathieu, Grigor Dimitrov, who we're not going to talk about it, but has been playing brilliantly.
Yeah, and is scheduled to play Djokovic if he gets through.
Well, he's got to play Diego Schwartzman tomorrow, and that's tough. Kerber against Sasnovich, that's a big old yes, please. Azarenka against Teichmann, Norrie against Khachanov, massive opportunity for Cam Norrie, I would say, to reach the second week of the slam. Trevisan, Darius Saville is on court 14, as is Felix Auger-Aliassime against Filip Krajinovic. You've got Elise Mertens, John Isner lower down the schedule. It's a cracking schedule tomorrow. So make sure you join us for tomorrow's podcast when we'll be reviewing all of it. Also, check out our Twitter and Instagram for Yelena Ostapenko face news, amongst other things. There was news of Matt's latest lunchtime pork incident today. This is the stuff you're missing out on if you're not following us on social media. We have our mascot, Cooper.
Right, Cooper.
Hello, Cooper. Cooper's parents are gallivanting around Paris right now. Hello, hey. Drew and David.
Hi, Drew and David.
We have our own mascots. None of us scored for them today, I'm afraid to say. I've got Carter, David's got Darwin, Matt's Gerald the cat, who's no longer with us. No points for anyone today. Many apologies. Billie Jean King, always scoring points. Every day is a point score for Billie Jean. She is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Ilana Kloss. We have our executive producers, Chris Albert Lee and Kyle Weingartner. And we have shout outs.
We have Tommy Doyle in Sydney.
Right, Tommy.
A lot like Tommy Paul.
Very tennis name. Tommy Haas. Tommy Robredo.
Yeah. That is a lot of Tommies, actually, isn't it?
Can you think of any Australian Tommies? I can't.
No. That's...
No.
We've just come up with three tennis Tommies. I think that's pretty good, David. Thank you, Tommy Doyle.
We have Celeste Byrne, who's also in Sydney.
All right, Celeste.
That makes me think of Daphne and Celeste, the pop double act in the 90s.
I'm looking at David.
They performed at Reading Festival and they got tomatoes thrown at them.
Oh, this has gone well.
It makes me think of Celeste, who's around now.
Yes, that's because Matt's younger than I am.
I don't know either. So, but Celeste.
Thank you, Celeste.
The friend of the pod.
We've had great. To talk about pop stars because I don't think there are any tennis Celestes.
No,
there should be.
There should be. Yeah. Thank you, Celeste, for being a tennis Celeste.
And finally today we have Brona Staunton in Dublin.
Oh.
Love the name Brona. I don't think there are any tennis Bronas.
No.
No.
In fact, Irish tennis players? The only one I can think of is Conor Nealon.
Yes. That's who I was thinking of, but that's all I've got.
Been retired a few years now, but... Irish tennis players, I want some.
Anyway, thank
delighted
you.
To have Irish
thank you very much,
tennis
Bruno.
Podcast
if you could,
listeners.
If you could sort out the lack of Irish tennis players, David would be much obliged.
Yeah, thanks, Bruno.
Thank you, and hello. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to all our friends of the Tennis Podcast for making these daily shows happen, for allowing us to be here at the French Open. We're loving covering it. We hope you're enjoying listening to these pods. Do make sure you sign up for the newsletter. Honestly, I know, obviously, it's my job to tell you they're great, but they also are really great. So sign up to the newsletter, follow us on Instagram, and check out Hannah's work on Twitter. It is all marvellous. Tell your friends, leave us an Apple Podcast review, and we'll speak to you all tomorrow.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.